are back here on the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter. I am Chip Patterson. That's Kyle Porter. I hope that you enjoyed our mid-season-ish evaluations. Our many, many thanks to Sean Martin for stopping by, and all of you for downloading. We are coming off sitting here recording on Monday, July 2nd. Kyle, we're coming off what was a sneaky good golf day. Action on both sides of the Atlantic. Senior U.S. Open as well. You'll catch every one of these every now and then where it just feels like you can wake up in the morning, pour yourself some coffee, and just sort of leave the live golf on until sunset. Good times for golf fans.
Yeah, women's major as well sneaked in there. It was kind of weird timing. I think they had some weather issues up in Chicago. But yeah, you will get these days. And there was, I remember there was one last year that we talked to. I think it was like, you had the USAM and you had something on the PGA Tour. And I think you had like the Solheim Cup, like just these random weekends in July, August, September that you're like, wow, that's pretty great. You know, like it's not a major, but it's still super fun for people who kind of nerd out on this stuff.
Yeah. And I think it was, I guess, a year ago, because wouldn't that have been a USAM that Joaquin Niemann was participating in? That where now we're watching him with a strong finish here at the Quicken Loans at TPC Potomac.
Yeah, it's so wild. Like, he's had four top 20s on the PGA Tour this year. He's 19. He's not going to be 20 until November.
He's your boy. Listen, we've already committed this to the books. You have drafted him. You are on team Joaquin Niemann. He may stand in line behind Patrick Cantlay, but he is absolutely a part of team Kyle Porter in the golf world. You don't need to. We'll get to him. We'll get to Francesco Molinari, the winner, the guy who just absolutely smoked the rest of the field. And I like what it means for him as well. But we got to start with Tiger, right? I mean, what do you make of this proposal? There's always a discussion about what Tiger Woods means to golf. Tiger Woods, for golf to be good, Tiger Woods needs to be good. I argue, Kyle, that this Tiger Woods, who leads the field in birdies, who seems very loose, who seems relaxed, he's talking to Dottie Pepper in between every single walk from a green to a tee. He's changing shirts multiple times. I like the theater and the spectacle of this Tiger Woods as much, maybe, as whatever is imagined by fans as this next step that needs to be taken. Consider me satisfied with where we are in the Tiger comeback.
It's pretty fascinating because I think we're at a point with Tiger where it's sort of like, it's almost like where we were at with Phil a few years ago, where you're like, wow. Like, he'll play a couple holes or a round or whatever, and you're like, wow, this guy might be the best player in the world right now.
Or a nine. He'll have nine holes where just, you know, like, oh, that guy, he just went out in 31 or 32. Like, this is insane.
Yeah. And then he'll play a stretch of three or four holes where you're like, wow, he looks like he's can't even contend on the web.com right now.
Right.
Like, he should be on the narco tour, you know, like, I feel like we keep saying, okay, well, Tiger's gonna come around. Like, look how good he is, right? Like, I think what we're getting right now might just like be who he is, and not because of the injury and not because of anything, but because when you're 42 years old,
yes,
it's really hard to focus for 4 days mentally, physically. It's hard to be locked in. This is something that Phil has sort of talked openly about. And I think that Tiger hasn't really talked about it. And I don't know if he even realizes it, but it's just so hard to do the things at 42 that you did at 24. And yet we catch glimpses where you're like, oh, wow. Like, this is unbelievable.
Right.
And so it feels like old Tiger's back and, you know, like all these different things. And I think Tiger might just be a guy who's like top 10 in strokes gained tee to green on the PGA Tour, but not sharp enough to win a bunch of tournaments like a Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson type.
Which,
is that fair?
No, absolutely fair. And I'm not I'm not at all willing to rule out that at any tournament, whether it's the Quicken Loans, whether it's the Open, whether it's the PGA Championship, or even, you know, back at Augusta, I'm not going to rule out that the stars could align and there's the right combination of field and everything else. I mean, even at the even as he is. There's a couple statistics. I'm sure you're going to point out a couple of them, but there's a couple of statistics that were almost like the outliers or alarming from his performance this weekend. And I think, you know, even with all that said, you know, if Francesco Molinari's not in the field at all, then, you know, maybe things are a little bit different on Sunday, but for sure he's in the mix to win this thing. And I think that that is representative of the fact that the talent that's there, you know, whether it's going to come together for 4 days is something that, as you mentioned, is very, very tough to expect from a 42-year-old, much less a 42-year-old who has been through the physical trauma of multiple surgeries as he has, that you've got to be just able to enjoy this without feeling like something is terribly wrong every time he doesn't win.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I wrote a piece on Monday for CBSSports.com about how, like, the way he's hitting the ball right now is the way that guys who win on the PGA Tour hit the ball. If you look at the top, so he's number six in strokes gained from tee to green right now. If you look at the top six, excluding this season, so the previous three seasons, you look at the top six guys each year at the end of the year in strokes gained tee to green, 15 of, so that's 18 players total, essentially, three seasons of six players. 15 of them won golf tournaments and three didn't. And so essentially what you're looking at is somebody who there's an overwhelming chance that he's going to win a golf tournament at some point. Maybe not this year. And maybe he doesn't stay in the top six in strokes gained tee to green. Maybe he starts hitting it poorly, or maybe he fades over the last few tournaments or whatever. But recent statistical evidence tells us that guys that hit the ball like Tiger does, and he's not, you know, he putted great last week, but the statistics tell us that guys who hit it like Tiger does win at least a golf tournament. The most interesting one I found was Jim Furyk finished, I think, fourth in strokes gained tee to green, which, for people who don't know, it's basically just like who are the best ball strikers on tour. He finished fourth in 2015, third or fourth, something like that. And I was like, oh, well, Furyk didn't win, did he? Looked it up. Of course he won. He won the RBC Heritage the week after Spieth won the Masters. And so you're going to run into a win at some point if you continue to hit the ball like that. But at the same time, somebody like Tiger, he's just, it's so weird because, and it's so unusual for him. Like he's just, he does these really sloppy things, especially around the greens. Like his chipping was kind of poor, which has not been true of his game so far this year. He misses these 3 and 4 footers that you're like, feels like something that like somebody like Rory would miss, you know, like we're used to, or DJ, somebody like that, even though DJ's turned into a great putter. But he does these very unusual things around the greens and sometimes with his irons that you're not used to Tiger doing, but that result in him sort of fading a little bit when you feel like he should be making a charge.
Is it bad that I'm almost, that part of me is almost boxing Tiger in as into like a celebrity appearance type thing? Like, for example, there are golf clubs and courses throughout the state of North Carolina that at different times through golf's history where, you know, popularity has sort of gone in different waves, you know, their claim to fame is that Arnold Palmer came here to this course when there was this one small, you know, PGA Tour event back in 1960, whatever, and he signed this plaque right here. And so check it out. Look at him signing the 18th pin flag. And part of the way that I'm imagining that this era of Tiger Woods' career is a little bit like it's on the appearance circuit. Like, yeah, I'm here. I'm the man. I'll give you just enough shots so that you can feel like you're getting it. You're getting your money's worth. But, you know, if we're being realistic, this game is not going to be good enough to go out there and contend to win. It struck me a little bit on Sunday. I forgot what was it, what, like 12 or 13 when he just put it on a, he threw it to the back of the green, put it on a rope and just rolled it right back to the pin. Like, I was like, man, that's, it just seems like he's showing off right now. He's showing off in the way that, you know, when there is a celebrity type event and these guys go to it, and, you know, Tiger puts on his show of dribbling the ball on his club and then being able to hit it like that. It feels like we're watching that in real time, but it's also at the same time, there is a competition to actually win the tournament going on. It's like there are two concurrent sort of themes to what's happening on the golf course anytime that Tiger Woods is out there now.
It is weird because the way that Tiger has sort of set up his career, even like, does it, okay. So first of all, has it felt at any point this year, like for how many minutes of 2018 did you feel like Tiger was definitely going to win a golf tournament?
Zero. Definitely?
Yeah.
Zero? Zero.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, I feel like he's had all these, it's like, okay, yeah, I just gave you the statistics. He's sixth in strokes gained tee to green. His putting is improving. He was top 10, like all these different things. But at the end of the day, you're like, well, I never felt like he was going to win last week because of more so because of what Molinari did. And then you look at Arnold Palmer and it was like, well, he had Rory behind him. It didn't really feel like he was going to be able to surpass him. And then you look at Valspar and he didn't play that great until like the last three holes. And it didn't he was just not really like holding the lead and pulling away on a Sunday or whatever. And so it's sort of weird that he's statistically been really good, but not really truly been in the thick of like winning a tournament on a Sunday. And so the other thing that I was thinking about is like Tiger set up his career to where, okay, even if he does win the Quicken Loans, like what does that even mean? Like, sure, it's cool. I think it's really cool because I think when he could have just mailed it in and gone on and designed courses and made $1 billion doing other stuff, he just is obsessed with the grind of the game.
Right.
Like,
which is for anybody who is obsessed with the grind of the game, that's something that is endearing.
Yeah. And you know who it's like? You know what it's like right now?
What?
It's kind of like Kobe.
Great call. Have you made that comparison before?
No. Well, I've compared the two. Just if you look at the trajectories of their careers and sort of the high points and low points, like very similar in terms of injuries and like when they were at their best and you know, like they're sort of the same age. I think Kobe might be a little bit younger. Or Kobe might be a lot younger. Anyway, it feels like the end of Kobe's career tour to where you're like, oh, they might get the seven seed. And it's like, okay, well,
what does that mean?
Yeah. Like Kobe has set this standard for himself of it's a championship or it's nothing. And that's kind of Tiger's deal. And I just don't have any confidence in Tiger right now that he's going to win a major championship. You know, and so like all this other stuff, it's great. It's entertaining. It's fun. I think it's phenomenal. I think it's fantastic if he goes out and wins Wyndham or the Northern Trust or whatever. But legacy wise and historical context, what are we actually doing?
Well, I mean, cashing these checks and getting the viewership numbers up. When's the next time we get to renegotiate that deal?
PGA Tour contract, I think, is up with the networks in 21.
Yeah, I guess it's time to be renegotiating.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I wrote about this maybe last year, but in a post-Tiger world, I don't know if Jay Monahan is real fired up about a post-Tiger TV negotiate. Like the next TV contract deal for the PGA Tour might be like a 50-year deal based on what Tiger's doing right now. Because you don't want to have to negotiate in a post-Tiger world. We've all seen the numbers. And so, yeah, absolutely, you're right. It's meaningful for the sport and especially for the hashtag brands and sponsors and all that stuff. But just from a pure golf perspective, it's hard to kind of cut through all the BS and decipher what it actually means.
Well, the the outcomes will, like, ultimately Tiger Woods is going to go down as the greatest golfer to ever live. And what we're watching, even if it's in a retirement tour, you know, I think that fans of Tiger will be able to take any success as a reason to continue watching. But I feel like I'm a little bit more confident than you that he can win a major. I just think that it's just going to have to be one of those chances. You know, you always talk about you only get but so many chances. It's going to be one mm-hmm. of those chances that comes about because, and I know we talked about wanting to get the French Open later. It's going to be one of those chances like everybody ejects on 18 and everybody hits their ball into the water. And then all of a sudden that round that got everybody fired up about has Tiger in the winner's circle. That's sort of the way that I imagine it happening.
And that would be sort of the craziest scenario of all, right? Because
we're used to him being in the final group and grinding out his 69 or 70 to win after everybody chases him.
Yeah, that's the blueprint. Like, that's what he's always done. And I think you're right. I think if he does win a major, it'll be like I'm big on the did you have a chance on the final round? And I think he's going to get like, I don't know, two more, three more, like real chances. And like he goes 1 for 2 or something like that, you know? And it doesn't seem like or feel like he's going to have like 10 chances in his 40s to win major championships. And I always go back to the 2013 Open. He won 5 times that year. He was great. He won the Bridgestone right after that Open. And he was in it, man. He was in it on Sunday. I think he was, I don't know if he ever held the solo lead, but he was within 1, he was within 2, whatever. He didn't play well. He didn't, I can't remember what he shot, but that's the round that Phil just played out of his mind and ended up winning going away. And he just is not, I think it's easy to conflate his injury and his age. And I think they're pretty separate. Like, I think we're seeing, I think a lot of what we see, we blame on injury, but it's actually a result of him being in his 40s and just being older and not able to, like I said, focus mentally and physically for 4 straight rounds over a grueling event.
The event was won in just absolutely a fuoco fashion. It was Francesco Molinari. Who, and I loved this, you pointed this out in the write-up, but he was in a position where in any other season, he's going over to Paris to go play in the French Open, but he's in an interesting position with his world golf rankings, and specifically with the future of his PGA Tour card, where he needed to come and play in this event. And so I love the idea of imagining Molinari, a world-class talent, who is recognized as such, as a world-class talent, just sort of making a business decision and then coming over and just blazing through that course. You know, a very good ball striker in his own right, but just to know that he had one goal on his mind, and that was to play his way into guaranteeing his PGA Tour card, and then being able to go out and execute on that, seemed like it was a story that doesn't exactly make for, you know, great montages or packages, but certainly reflects on the life of a European player or an American player, you know, just trying to be able to balance your status on all these different tours. Any golfer goes into a weekend wanting to play his best golf, wanting to make the cut, wanting to win. But I feel like Molinari, a world-class talent, was put in a position that we often see of the younger players where it's like, no, this is your future right here. You know, he didn't get the Ian Poulter treatment, but still that angle to this I liked in terms of Molinari's win, especially considering the way that he played compared to the rest of the field.
Yeah, I think he's one of the more underrated guys in the world.
Agree. Absolutely.
You know, I mean, so the top two on the PGA Tour right now in strokes gained tee to green, DJ and Francesco Molinari.
Number 2 in the world. Yeah, he should be number 2 in the world. DJ number 1, Molinari number 2. I've always said Molinari, hands down, one of the 2 best golfers in the entire world.
I mean, he's one of those guys who, great ball striker. If he putts it well, he wins. There's, you know, 25 of them out there, and he's one of them. But he might be the most underrated of them. He's had a really good European tour career. Obviously won the BMW PGA. Now he's almost certainly going to be on the European Ryder Cup team. But yeah, he was just, I mean, his back nine on Sunday was, it was weird because nobody was talking about it because there was a lot of other stuff going on between Tiger and then even like the LeBron stuff and other things in golf too, between French Open, senior US Open. I think the women's event was like ending as he was starting his back. There was just a lot going on. But he starts eagle and then he's six under through his first five holes on the back nine. And you're like, is he going to shoot a 59 in the final round to win by 15? And he ended up cooling off. But I mean,
he was vibing too. He was just, and who is he playing with? Was he playing with Zach Blair?
No, it was Ryan Armour and Zach Blair were in the second to last group. And it was Molinari and I don't even remember. I don't know, but he's one of those guys who like he's not like you don't watch him hit it and you think like Koepka or DJ or Rory. Like it doesn't look like when Rory.
Oh, was it Abraham?
Oh yeah, it was Abraham Answer.
And answer was kind of falling apart, and Zach Blair couldn't get a birdie, and everyone else in those final, in addition to the fact that the buzz of Tiger Woods and what it looked, I wasn't there obviously, but it looked like, you know, the crowd sort of moving with Woods, so like the things are thinning out as the final groups are coming in, and in addition to things thinning out, the fact that three of the four last players on the course were just falling to pieces while Molinari was just hitting his foot on the gas. I found it to be very impressive, yet at the same time not making for very dramatic theater.
No, it wasn't. He hit 62 of 72 greens in regulation, though.
Ridiculous.
Like there's a reason that people call him the metronome. Like it's just automatic. You know, he had 42 of 56 fairways and 62 of 72 greens in regulation. Made one bogey over the last 54 holes. And like I said, like he's not somebody who you watch and you're like he doesn't make your jaw drop, but if you watch him for like 25 straight holes, he might, because he's not going to miss a shot.
Right.
And I think that's what's so impressive about somebody like him, to where he's not short off the tee or with his irons. But he's not DJ Long, but he's not going to hit it in the rough. And he's really, really good with his irons and with his wedges, hits it both ways. Like it's pretty impressive to watch.
If you want to get a game that is as consistent that they call you the metronome, well, then you maybe need to get some lessons. I don't know if just playing by yourself is going to be able to cut it. And at Topgolf, they do lessons differently. I don't know if you knew that Topgolf would be able to improve your game and be able to provide some strokes off of your handicap. In addition to everything that they have that is fun and relaxing and a great way to spend time with friends, they have certified instructors. So those certified instructors can not only help you improve your game, but they want you to also have that great time you've come to expect from Topgolf. So you can be able to sip, snack, swing, and play better with Topgolf Coach. So book a lesson today at topgolf.com/lessons. Your local Topgolf facility certified instructor is going to give you everything that you love about Topgolf, plus that tip that you need so that your follow through, you know, it's a little bit higher. Remember, we want to swing slow, finish high. That's the way that we sort of straighten out that drive. Again, it's topgolf.com/lessons. Book a lesson today, topgolf.com/lessons. Francesco Molinari, pretty much, do you think that he has secured himself a spot on the Ryder Cup team with this win?
Yes, I think him and Alex Noren locked up spots on Sunday with their wins.
Alex Noren, the winner in the French Open, posted the low score in the clubhouse and then got to watch as everyone else fell apart behind him. The glimpse at Le Nationale was a great sort of teaser for the Ryder Cup for me. I don't watch the French Open every single year. And I kind of stumbled upon it.
You don't?
I don't. I think that knowing now that this is going to be where the Ryder Cup is, being able to see all the water, getting to see some crazy par threes. There's a couple greens that just have an insane runoff area. It definitely whet the appetite a little bit. Is the French Open appointment viewing for you? Like, I guess Scottish Open, French Open, BMW, like, would you consider it among the top five or six events on the European Tour circuit?
Yeah. I mean, I think obviously being part of the Rolex series, I think all those events are pretty good. I mean, I'm into the Irish Open. I'm into the Scottish Open, maybe more so for the courses, but they also have good fields. This one is it's kind of like a poor man's BMW PGA championship to me. Like we saw at Wentworth earlier this year. But when you've got, Sergio, John Rahm, Norin, JT,
Justin Thomas
coming down to the end, then it's like, okay, like that's, I can be into that, especially as a Ryder Cup course, preview for later on this year.
What do you think about the course so far?
Well, I think that if any of the matches get to the last couple of holes, it's interesting because we didn't see the way that Hazeltine was set up in 16 was great because so many matches ended at hole 16, which is this sort of decision-making par five. We saw obviously the Rory Eagle and bow there to the crowd, and it was just a lot of theatrics on 16. And in Paris, it seems like 18 is sort of that type of hole, but I don't know how many matches are going to get there, but if they do, it's going to be crazy. I mean, we saw guys hit, make double at 18 to essentially lose the tournament. We saw guys hit balls in the water there. It's going to be, pretty wild if some of the matches come down to 18. I mean, what if the final match is like Reed and Sergio and it comes down to 18 to win the Ryder Cup? Can you imagine hitting that shot over the water there?
Well, I know I don't want anybody other than Patrick Reed to hit that shot. I want no one other than the person with the most amount of self-confidence in the globe in his own game to be standing over that shot. Absolutely not.
And Europe doesn't want anybody besides Sergio hitting it either. And Sergio is a freaking Ryder Cup legend. I mean, that would, I just laid out like one of the five best scenarios that could take place in September. But I saw where they're setting it up for 6,500 fans on the first tee. And in my head, I was like, oh, that's probably how many they had at Hazeltine. Cause I was in there. I was among the people there. They had like 1,500. It's going to be wild. I mean, it's going to be insane. And, we say this every week, but if you look at the two, I mean, we're talking about guys that, no offense to Tiger, but we were talking about guys this weekend in Norin, Molinari, and Tiger who are going to be among the worst players on their teams. Like, and I don't mean that as a slight to any of those
right.
guys. They're just not, like, Molinari and Norin aren't even in the top five on Europe's squad, and Tiger's probably not going to be, I don't know, he'll be like the 10th best player on the U.S. team. As of right now, not from a historical perspective. So
how much do you think Tiger actually gets put out there? Like, who's Tiger teaming up with? We already heard it's not going to be Phil. Who's Tiger going to play with? And how often do you think he comes up in competition?
Who is Tiger going to play with? Can't you see Tiger and Bryson?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh, you killed me with can you imagine what Bryson's going to say when he gets handed the yardage book in meters? Have you made that joke with your friends yet? Have y'all been running that one around?
No, that was off the cuff. We were texting over the weekend.
Because I took the shot from my hotel room in Lisbon. I was like, they've got TV Sporto, and there's like TV Sport. There's like four different TV Sporto channels, and like one of them was all like number one was always going to have the whatever World Cup match was going to be on that day, and then they were just going to replay the other World Cup matches. But on TV Sporto 4, I was able to find the Portuguese coverage of Bubba's win at Hartford, and also get a lot of European tour. Dude, they, I saw like a European tour sort of behind the scenes featurette on Fleetwood. I mean, I didn't understand most of it because it was like all narrated in Portuguese, but like when they were like, oh, quatro par, or you're like those, I had, it was like quatro subpar. I think that's, yeah, I think it's quatro subpar was what I picked up as being four under par. And that was actually what I was watching when JT was falling apart. But yeah, when it's just measured, I was like, this next shot's 473 meters. Bryson's going to lose it.
He is. They might ban his protractor and all of his different devices. I'm looking at the official world golf rankings right now. Top 29 in the world, 26 are either European or American.
Who else? So I guess was it Jason Day?
Yeah.
Whatchamacallit? Hideki?
Hideki and Mark Leishman is the other one.
Of course. Big game hunter.
Yeah, that's it. And then you got to go down to Barnrat at 30 before you get to a non-European or American.
Mm.
That's wild.
The game's roots are really showing with this Euro-American dominance.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels like everything. I mean, obviously the golf season is so long, and it's so much about the majors and even the FedEx Cup, especially on this side of the Atlantic. But it feels like everything this year is just pointing at the Ryder Cup, you know. And I think that guys just kind of, especially the top players, I think they have kind of one eye on it. Not the entire year, but they're certainly thinking about it. And, you know, Justin Thomas going to Paris to play the course. I mean, he's not part of the European Tour. That's not a small thing to get over there and play for a week before the Open Championship and then come back. And I don't know. It's a big deal. And it's going to be a lot of fun, as always.
Yeah, I saw some conversation. Why didn't more golfers follow Justin Thomas's lead? It's tough because unlike playing the Scottish Open before the Open Championship, going back and forth and then back again, it's taxing. It is physically taxing on the body to be doing that.
Yeah, totally. I liked your pairings question, by the way. So if let's take the top, let's do this. So we'll go top 11 is Koepka, DJ, Reed, Thomas, Bubba, Spieth, Fowler, Bryson, Webb, Phil, Kuchar, and then we'll throw Tiger in as the 12th. What are the pairings there? So to me, it's Spieth and Reed. It's Ricky and JT, who, by the way, at the President's Cup were awesome. Like I think Ricky and JT could feasibly be the best pairing that the U.S. can put out there.
Really? Yeah, I would take that. But what about the Koepka DJ?
Did they play together at the 16 Ryder Cup?
They played together at the 16 Ryder Cup. They did not play together at the President's Cup. I think wasn't that Koepka and JT that just I forgot who they matched up against. Am I right about that? Wasn't there a Koepka JT pairing that just went out and blitzkrieged the opponent?
Yeah, I think that's right. So in 16, DJ played with Kuchar on the first day, twice actually, and then on the second day he played. Oh yeah, that's right. It was Rory and Peters against Koepka and DJ, and NASA had to be put on high alert. For that foursome. So yeah, I don't know. I kind of like DJ and Kuchar together. I think that's fun and quirky and just sort of works. I could see that.
Are Bubba and Webb too tight? Like, are they too close with each other?
Well, that's the big question. Like, who do you put with Bubba? Like, I mean,
Webb and Bubba are close, right?
Yeah, yeah, like they're friends and friendly. I think they've played together before at a Ryder Cup. I don't know. I'm not positive on that. But yeah, I guess you could throw them together. But then you still got Phil. So you could, I don't know.
Phil and Bryson.
Yeah, but then so do you got Tiger Koepka?
No, Tiger Reed.
Tiger.
That's it's got to happen.
Do you let Reed just play by himself in the twosomes? It's going to be, I could do this all day, just thinking about the different permutations and just the ways that this is all going to play out. In fact, I do this all day. This is what I do when I sit at home in my shed. I just think about Ryder Cup combinations.
All right. So what about, who do you put with John Rahm? You need a steadying presence.
Yeah. I feel like the European side always does the, well, I don't know. Like, didn't they go Sergio and Rafa last time?
Like they lean a little bit, maybe arguably too much into the shared nationalities.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know if that was just for last time or if it was something that they always do. I'd have to go back and look. So your top 10 right now on the European side, I was just looking this up. You've got, let's see here. You've got Tyrrell Hatton is number one.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I think Terrell's a good player. I don't know if he's the best guy on the European side. Justin Rose, Tommy Fleetwood and John Rahm are going to melt some souls, I feel like. So Tyrrell Hatton, Justin Rose, Tommy Fleetwood, Molinari. And then you've got...
I like Justin Rose and John Rahm because most of the rest of the European team isn't tall enough to look John Rahm in the eye and tell him to quiet down. At least Justin Rose, he doesn't have the vertical disadvantage that some of the rest of the European teammates do.
So then you've got Rahm, Norin, Rory, and Casey. Those are your automatic qualifiers right now.
Rahm and Norin is a lot of beef too.
Yeah, it's a lot of muscle there.
A lot thick.
As your captain's picks right now, as it stands right now, you would have they do this so weird. You'd have Sergio. You'd have
Stenson.
You'd have Stenson. You'd have Poulter, and you'd probably have Rafa or Fitzpatrick, maybe.
Fitzpatrick's been playing well recently.
Yeah, one of those two guys. Yeah, I don't know. The European side is going to be interesting because Hatton's your number one guy based on points. Is he scaring a lot of the U.S. side?
No.
Yeah, I don't. I think Fleetwood does. I think Rahm does.
Let's send Tiger out against Hatton so that the Americans can get a Tiger win. What if that's Tiger's one victory this year?
Is Tiger over Hatton in the first singles match on Sunday?
Yeah.
Yeah. Except, well, Reed's going to have to play the first one so he can also make a seat after the last one. Man, I can't wait until the Ryder Cup. I'm not going to sleep for like three straight days. It's going to be unbelievable.
How are you feeling about sleep status for the Open?
I'm already training.
Yeah.
Yeah, so usually we put the kids down at about 7:45 or 8. I let them put me down that week at like 7:30 and then I go to sleep and then they go to sleep. And yeah, it's fun. Like, I love the Open. I think it's my second favorite, maybe my favorite major. Is that a hot take?
No, I mean, from an American viewing experience, there's something that I always find a little bit calm, maybe not calming, but like the quiet around me as I watch like the first 4 hours of coverage really allows me to indulge and let all the golf sort of envelop me, where otherwise you're dealing with the regular distractions that would be coming with daylight hours over here. So there's something about that still and the calm and the quiet of the early morning hours around you that allows the full British Open viewing experience to be one that you feel like you can really invest in.
Yeah, I think that's such a good take because so my morning routine is get up, read a little, go to the gym, come back, start work at like, I don't know, 7:30, something like that. But even by then, you just feel like you're getting emails and DMs and just all this stuff.
Right.
And the times when I've had to like write, like before a trip or I don't know, for whatever reason, I was just up super early. and it, like, if I write something at like 5 a.m, you're like, oh, this is like 100 times easier than during the middle of the day. And there is such a, it's just a completely different experience. I know this is a very like wonky 2018 media conversation, but
no, I think you can do it for fans, because I know golf fans, I have friends that, you know, we all sort of had this shared experience of, all right, so, you know, who's getting up, or like you're almost like challenging each other, like you getting up for the coverage, or what time are you gonna get up to watch? Mm-hmm. And often it had to do with like when Tiger was teeing off, or you know, what the different pairings are, who you're looking forward to seeing. But there was I've always, as a golf fan, at least in my personal life, aside from the professional life, really enjoyed that experience of waking up to golf and just letting, like, Will Brinson, NFL writer for CBS Sports, he gets in on it, gets off on it. Like, yeah. We're G-chatting, we're telling each, you know, talking to each other about when we're going to wake up to watch British Open stuff. So he's that's another good example of someone who doesn't have a professional responsibility to be getting up, but still recognizes how awesome that viewing experience is as a golf fan with no distractions.
Yeah, totally. It's definitely unique. And there have been moments where, like, I'll wake up at, I don't know, 2 or 2:30, and my wife is like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Hey, Mike Tirico, like he's on my TV. He's calling. Like, I gotta go. And it's an experience that you don't get to just not have the noise, and you don't get to consume this stuff without a million other things going on. And I think it makes for, I don't know, it's cool. It's unique, and I don't need it every week. You know, it's kind of like match play. Like, it's kind of like the Zurich Classic. Like, I don't need that every week, but as a once a year sort of experience, I think it's pretty awesome.
And twice a year with the Ryder Cup.
There you go.
Yeah. If you're a true golf fan, then you have got to get a Roku streaming player. It's a device you can plug into your TV to unlock thousands of live streaming and on-demand channels, including the stellar, pristine CBS Sports app. It's awesome if you have subscriptions to any of the professional sports league apps as well. They're all available on the Roku platform, so you can stream right to your TV. And even if you don't have premium subscriptions, Roku is an awesome way to catch your favorite local teams live with apps through many of the cable providers. Plus, of course, Roku has access to all the movies and TV shows you could want, with more than 500,000 available across free and paid channels. So check them all out. Roku streaming players start at just $29.99 for the basic player, or you can stream for the higher-end players, which stream in 4K with HDR. So with, you know, the Open Championship, we've got the Ryder Cup, a lot of these things that we're talking about, this is the perfect time for you to get in on a Roku streaming player. Once again, they start at $29.99 for the basic player. So visit Roku.com, that's R-O-K-U, to learn more and start streaming today. As we turn our attention back to the events of Sunday at TPC Potomac, we have a allegation of cheating. So, I want to talk about Sung Kang, but I want to start by approaching it with this question. Do you believe that in this era, in the year of our Lord 2018, with loose morals run abound, that even a stuck-up golf fan finds it hard to get too angry about the allegations of cheating if it does not involve one of the game stars?
Yeah, I don't think anybody cares.
I don't think anybody cared.
You would think
that, given the, and I'll let you, you know, get into the details of the allegations for, you know, where the ball crossed the hazard, but I don't think that it resonated with the kind of outrage that you might expect given an allegation of cheating in a sport like golf, where integrity is of the utmost values.
Yeah, it's weird, because it matters. And the part that's difficult for me is you don't want to be the curmudgeonly, like, this is a game of integrity. And like, look, people have been cheating for as long as golf has been around. Like, it wasn't, people are not intrinsically different in 2018 than they were in 1918. You know, humans are human gonna human, right?
Like, the foot wedge has always been in the bag.
Yeah, like, it's part of the human condition. And so I don't get real, like, fired up about that part of the take. But then it almost goes too far the other way, right? To where you're like, oh yeah, you can just whatever you want to do. Like Phil at the US Open, yeah, it was funny. Yeah, cool, whatever. And it's like, well, that's not really like a good place to land either, because then fundamentally you're turning this into a different sport. And it's weird because you're sort of, it'd be like if the NBA called its own fouls, or the NFL called its own pass interference,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
It's just, it's difficult to legislate. And I think it's difficult to know like where to land in terms of outrage about specific events. I wasn't there. The only evidence I have of anything is the shot link, you know, overhead squiggly lines on my PGAtour.com. You know, like, it's difficult to decipher. But I do think that, well, I don't want to go there. I think that
if this was Tiger or even Ricky Fowler, then mm-hmm. it opens the door for a lot of takes on both sides. I hate saying both sides, but just like those who are going to say it doesn't matter, and those who are going to say like Ricky is a cheater, and it becomes like a talking point or something where it sort of follows him. But because it was Sung Kang, it totally failed to extend beyond what was to me an oddity. You know, like mm-hmm. it was like, ooh. Oh, this is interesting. And then you sit back and you wait for, you know, 2 hours or something like that, and you realize it doesn't. No one really cared. And and that's just sort of where we are very selective. And this extends beyond golf. I think you can say that this is reflected in a lot of other places in sports and also society, is that we're very selective about when we want to care a lot about our morals and integrity. And when it's Sung Kang and it wasn't to win the golf tournament, it's just not going to resonate.
Yeah. And I think it's hard to talk about this without speaking in cliches, isn't it?
It's very hard.
I think that it matters who called you out as well.
Like when it's like, your playing partner.
Well, what I'm saying is if Justin Thomas had accused Sung Kang of cheating, it's a bigger story, right?
Ooh, yes, 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 yes.
Or if Rory McIlroy had called out Sung Kang for cheating, or whoever.
Like, I thought the biggest golf player starts controversy on Twitter was going to be JT going after Barstool. I didn't realize that it was going to be a golfer getting in on Twitter to talk about how the guy he played with cheated. And it was weird too. Like, I didn't notice this during the broadcast. I didn't notice this at the time, but like another group played through. I mean, this just sounds like it was, it sounds like it was a very odd situation in the moment, that now we just kind of have to shrug our shoulders and keep moving.
Yeah, it's interesting because, and this is probably true of all sports, I don't follow other sports as closely media-wise as I do golf, but the top 10 guys set the agenda. If Rory and Phil say that backstopping is a big issue, then it's a big issue. If they don't, then it's not. You know, like, and I think that, and to me, that's the more interesting part here, is that if Ricky Fowler is playing with Sung Kang and he, you know, tweets at who, you know, he sends out a tweet that says, hey, Sung Kang's a cheater. That's a huge story.
Yeah. The integrity of our game is compromised today. And I've never been more ashamed to call myself a PGA Tour player. much love to my sponsor and tournament host, Quicken Loans.
Yeah. And my five other insurance sponsors as well.
Yeah,
but seriously, like,
What if Phil comes out and Phil's like, yeah, Sun Kang was just cheating, using the rules to his advantage.
I hope that that's so. Phil's playing Greenbrier this week.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. He might be real loose. I mean, I know the casino was shut down last weekend because the Greenbrier was hosting the Fourth Circuit of the Supreme Court.
Were they really?
Yeah, John Roberts. It's like John Roberts is the Fourth Circuit representative for the Supreme Court. So it's like everybody in the Fourth Circuit, which I think is North Carolina, Virginia, and I guess West Virginia too, sort of a mid-Atlantic region. All the judges, justices, and you know, some attorneys from the area were up there. So they shut down the casino while they're having this like official Fourth Circuit sort of convention. And then as soon as the convention is over, all the attorneys and judges go home. They open the casino, and the PGA Tour comes flooding in.
That's incredible. That is a your range is pretty wide if you can just flip right from the Supreme Court to the, you know, like a mid-level PGA Tour stop.
Well, I think it's considered based on the money it brings in, they are more of equal value than you would assume based on the prestige of the events through our eyes.
That's like Clay Thompson range. That's incredible. I think those guys set the agenda for the talking points. And, you know, Brian Curtis, I haven't finished it, but he's got an interesting piece on The Ringer today about how LeBron's decision, everybody knows what I'm talking about, but the actual show, kind of flipped the balance of power, from media to players, in terms of like what they want the talking points in the media to be. And I think I don't know if the decision flipped it, but I think it's kind of true. Like, whatever, like, people only care in golf about what Rory and Tiger and Phil and Spieth and Ricky are saying. So whatever they talk about, guess what? That's what we're going to write.
Yeah.
And people may or may not like that. That's just the way it is. I had a conversation with Shane Bacon and I think Kevin Van Valkenburg at the Masters a couple years ago. And I was like, look, like, eight guys in golf matter. It's like eight guys.
Yeah.
That's it. Nine guys, whatever. That's it. And, you know, whatever they want to talk about is going to be talked about. And so that was my big takeaway from the Joel Dahman and Sun Kang showdown. That was just a couple of tweets.
Let me just get this out before we get out of here. It was just a couple tweets. I don't know why it was that big a deal. that's good stuff. Any big expectations for the Greenbrier?
No, I'm ready for the Open. I don't know. Like, I guess we do have the fifth major, the John Deere,
yeah,
the week after. But Greenbrier, I don't know. It's tough. It's a tough spot. This week in general for sports is just like, can we just cancel sports for the week? Like, it's July 4th and I want to take the kids to the pool and I don't know. I'm just kind of ejected on. That's probably not the answer you're looking for, but I'm kind of ejected on sports this week.
So follow, check out CBSSports.com for all Kyle's picks. give me Phil to win and also to triple up playing blackjack on Saturday night before shooting a 65 on Sunday.
I'll I want Phil to win. If Phil's in contention, I'm back in. Reel me back in, Phil. By the way, I don't listen to a lot of the stuff that we talk about, or I don't go back and listen to like my own podcast very much. But I did when we did it with Sean, and him picking Phil to win the Open. Like, I laughed at it when he said it, and then when I went back and listened and heard him say it again, I've forgotten about it and I laughed again. That was incredible. What if Phil wins the Open?
Oh, it'd be, yeah, I'm ready for it. Here for it. I lost my mind at that part. I wasn't expecting Sean to drop that on me at all.
Yeah, that was great. I'm going to go Xander back to back at the Greenbrier.
Sick. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're sitting here throwing out all these Ryder Cup pairing predicaments. Xander with another win, a couple more top finishes, It'd be automatic.
Yeah, he could usurp somebody like Webb Simpson, who's in 10th or 11th. You know, it's going to be pretty interesting at the kind of at the bottom of those, that top 10 or 12 there.
Xander Schauffele over Tyrell Hatton, 5-4. There we go. Give me that dub.
I love it.
Let's go. Follow him on Twitter at KylePorterCBS. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. We'll be back next week to recap all the action from the Greenbrier, as well as start to really put together our Open Championship at Carnoustie preview material. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip. Talk to you soon.